From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Happy Monday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. We're going to be opening up the phone lines. That's right. And the question is very specific, and it's this. How have you experienced racism? And if you have, did you address it? Did you stay silent? We would love to hear from you. 888-973-5476. That number is 888-973-CHIRO. And coming up at 10:33, Craig Dockstader, a former police officer who served in Arizona and the state of Washington, on why all four officers need to be charged in the death of George Floyd and how he believes we need to move forward. We do all that next, but right now, let's get to the show. Ursula, as we wait for those phone calls, before the end of the last hour, I was telling you the story in which I remained silent, and I'll kind of rehash that. I'll go fast. Ursula, you there with me, buddy?
I am, absolutely. Yeah, I'll listening go really fast. Intently.
So in August of 2018, if you guys remember, here locally, it was a national story. I had just happened to be on the air. I was new in this whole news side of radio. Well, they stole a plane. Somebody stole a plane. And if you guys remember that Horizon Air that was stolen at SeaTac Airport. Well, that was on a Thursday or Friday, I believe.
It was a Friday night.
It was a Friday night. And that Monday, our boss, our old boss, yes, I always make fun of my current bosses, but this was actually an old boss that we had. And so he had us in to talk about everything and kind of recap our experience and what happened. And he said, now, okay, hey, G, in the future, in that case, I would need your urban perspective on things. So I said, you need my urban perspective on the plane being stolen? He says, yes, exactly. I'm going to need your urban perspective. I'm walking up out of there, and I'm like, urban perspective. So I remained silent, Ursula. I didn't say anything.
What did you think he was meaning by that? Like, what was he trying to imply?
What would black people think? What would black people think about a plane being stolen? Now, before we get to our serious conversation, I've been feeling like I need to have a little levity, little fun real quick.
Uh-huh.
And so I actually did continue that conversation with my friends, and they were like, man, you didn't say nothing. I said, nah, man, I ain't say nothing. I ain't want them to be like, oh, man, black man trying to cause some trouble at work. And I said, you know what I should have said? And he said, what's that? I said, man, I should have said, oh, you want the urban perspective? Oh, I'm glad you asked. Here it is. Ain't nowhere in the world a black man would have went and tried to steal a plane. That's what I wanted to say, but I didn't say it. But anyways, I wanted to bring some levity, have some fun.
Oh,
with the
my gosh.
But
okay.
we're all learning,
though. I mean, that's just the point. That we all have regrets. We all have regrets.
And I should have said something.
Yeah, and we have a lot of people holding on right now. We're going to start off with D. Who is joining us now on the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Dee. How have you experienced racism?
I was in Issaquah sitting in my car. The alarm wasn't going off. I was just sitting in my car, oblivious to what was going around me. When I stepped out, I was surrounded by three police officers with their guns pointed, one at my head, my temple, and my back of my head for about a... time seemed to stop, but it was more than a minute. And then they holstered their weapons and they told me to have a nice day.
And
I didn't say anything.
Did they ever explain why that happened?
No. And I didn't ask. When I happened to tell some of my friends who happened to be white, they told me, well, you know, Issaquah, maybe you should have let people know why you're in the area. I mean, I was looking for an excuse why they should pull their weapons on me, I actually did it to myself as well, but they were just explaining to me how I should make white people more comfortable.
Hey,
so these things won't happen.
Really, really, really quick, D, you just said something. You did try to find out reasons as to, you asked yourself why that happened to you, didn't you?
Yeah, I was trying to give them an excuse why they...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why
I know that feeling.
Their weapons on me.
Mm-hmm. I know that feeling.
Well, tell me, and when you say you know that feeling, is it because you feel like, okay, now it's my fault that I...
I think, and Dee, I don't want to speak for you. So you tell us why. Why do you think you did that, Dee?
You know, there's like two Americas, and to survive being black in America, you have to be conscious or be aware of white fear. And so, like, for example, if you were going to enter an elevator and there's only one person in there who happens to be white and female, would you wait for the next elevator? I mean, you're conscious of it because, you know, they could do anything and no one will side with you. You just don't want to go through that. So you have to constantly be thinking. If police pull you over, keep your hands on the steering wheel. If you're going to take your wallet out or get your insurance and so forth, you have to say it before you do it. Otherwise, their fear will kill you. Remember that gentleman who was laying on his back with his hands up trying to help this child with special needs who ran off, and the police shot him. And he asked him, he was laying on his back with his hands up, and he's telling him he's playing, you know, the child's playing with a truck. Why did you shoot me? And the police officer said, I don't know why. It's just sort of ingrained. Yeah, I'm embarrassed to actually say I was looking for why. What did I do? It must have been my fault.
Don't feel embarrassed to say that.
Don't. Thank you, Dee, for your call. Really appreciate you. And Ursula, Dee said something just now when she talked about the elevator. I just almost hollered when she said that. You guys know I used to have a car detailing service in downtown Bellevue, right there at the PSE building. Somebody listening, you probably remember me there. I used to have a detailing service that was downstairs of the PSE building right there off of 4th Avenue. And I would get there every single morning around between 6:30 in the morning to get there. Well, I would have to take the elevator down to the bottom. Anytime there was, because she mentioned something that was just unbelievable. Anytime that there was like, it might be like a white lady that's in the elevator at that time in the morning, I would wait and let her go on the elevator first because I didn't want her to feel fear. I'm not blaming that. I'm not blaming that on white people. That wasn't that white lady's fault, that the reason why I didn't get in the elevator. That's not her fault. That was just me.
It's your reality.
It was my reality of saying, I don't want her to be nervous while I'm getting to that elevator. So I used to make a conscious decision on making sure that early in the morning in Bellevue, I would make sure that I would get on the elevator by myself. So when Dee brought that up, I could not believe she said that.
Mm. Omar in Seattle is joining us now on the G and Ursula Show. Omar, good morning. And how have you experienced this?
So I work for a pretty big company. I can't mention who they are, of course. Just without fail, you know, I'm a very professional person, and without fail, there's been many times where people are asking me, do I know what I'm doing? How long have you worked for the company? Kind of just hovering around. It's kind of hard to explain with, you know, not telling you exactly what I do, but that's something, it's very subtle. But it's something that I always, you know, keep in the back of my head that, you know, there's a reason why they're asking me this.
Is it as if they're surprised that you would be as intelligent as you are, that you
exactly.
would be able.
Exactly. I'm educated. I'm just a very professional person, and that's the kind of the thing is, it doesn't matter if you're a professional black man in this world or whatever. People are still going to look down on you, because, you know, with everything that's going on. The last thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, I support what's going on. I don't agree with everything that's going on. And I didn't, you know, go down in protest or anything. But today feels extremely tense. I've gone to a gas station. I've gone to multiple places. I feel like people are looking at me as if, you know, I'm the problem. And maybe I had something to do with, you know, looting or the destruction of the city.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I mean, that is what we're talking about, having to use this very dark period in our history as the time to change. And I'm sorry that you, we're going to just continue to, you know, do what we can with our show. But really, this starts with each and every single one of us. And yeah, I'm sorry that you have faced that. And we will continue to fight for you. And I know that you will continue to fight for others as well. Thank you, Omar. We are going to go next to Charles in Renton. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning.
How have you experienced this? Good. I mean, this is a tough time, but we want everybody to have a chance to talk about what they've experienced. And honestly, we're doing this because we want change. And we have to, expose the ugliness before we can have change.
Right. Well, the first time I experienced racism was when I was 5 years old. And my family was one of three families that were not white in the non-white in a white neighborhood. And one day I was going to the store, which was around the corner from where I lived, and there's a group of guys standing on the corner out front of this bar, and one of them said, like, hey, you know, what are you doing on the block? You know, I don't want to see you on this block. And I'm like 5 years old, and I'm like, yeah. And so I went to the store, and, I got what I had and went home. And, you know, I didn't say anything to anybody. And the next day, my mom sent me to the store again, and I went around. And the same guys were out there, and one guy says to me, he goes, didn't I tell you to stay off the block? And I, you know, kind of looked at him. I said, well, that was yesterday. But that was, you know, that was one time. And then when I was like 13, I saw the group of guys beating up a black guy because he was with a white girl. And, and I'm like, you know, this is all, you know, even back then it was all wrong and everything.
And did you stay silent, though? Did you speak up or did you stay silent?
Oh, no, I said something. But, you know, it was like, it's hard to explain. It was like it fell on deaf ears. You know, I mean, I knew the guys that were doing the beating because I grew up with them. You know, and I'm like, you know, this is, you know, and I said, like, this is bull, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then going on, well, you know, he shouldn't be with her and stuff. And I'm, no, you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, that could be me.
Well,
you know, so I kind of stopped hanging out with them.
Thank you for sharing your experience, Charles. And again, we share these because we also want to say we need to speak up. We cannot stay silent.
Let's bring in Carol. Carol, welcome into the G and Ursula show. What did you experience?
Yes, thank you. I'm a retired white woman that lives in the suburbs. I was raised in the suburbs. And I wanted to share my comments in support of the conversation around a focus on hope and progress and the potential for change. And through the story of my own, I was raised in a family where my father was an immigrant from Europe. He came from a culture, and I was raised in a family that was very racist. Horrible things were said and done all of my growing up years. And I watched personally the transformation of my father, who, when he died at the age of 83, had seven biracial great-grandchildren, had two black men that had joined our family by marrying two of his granddaughters, and who, excuse me, was transformed by simply his great-grandchildren being born and being part of our family.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes my grown children don't understand. They get upset with me because I don't get all hot and fired up about what's going on in our communities right now, even though I think it's horribly sad. And I get really discouraged sometimes because I don't think we're making as much progress as I think we have or should be making. But they don't understand that in my 60-plus years, the change that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. You've seen change, and it gives you hope.
And in my father, in my family, in my community, and I find that incredibly hopeful. Even though what I see around me sometimes makes me angry and sad, and yes, I fear for the lives of my biracial grandchildren sometimes. That's all true, but it all happens at the same time. And I wanted to share that story because it's the story of hope and progress. And that's where I choose to focus.
Thank you so much, Carol. We really appreciate that. We are going to take one more call with the little time that we have, and that is Frederick. Good morning, Frederick.
Yeah, hi.
You have had an incident that you wanted to share.
Yes, I was I live in Seattle, Washington, and I was over in the Covington area. And I was driving, and I got pulled over by some police officers. And I said, why did you pull me over? And I know my blinkers work, my lights work, everything works. And he asked me, what are you doing in this neighborhood? And I said, I'm going to visit a friend. Is that like against the law or something? Or did I do something wrong? And my car, you know, obviously I'm black. I'm a black man. My car wasn't the greatest car. Okay. And so they proceeded to take my identification, checked everything out. And then they came back to me and said I was okay to go. And I just. That really bothered me.
Well, tell me specifically how it made you feel.
It just made me feel like I'm not free to go where I want to go. And I told a friend about it, and he made a joke that he said, you probably got pulled over for a DWB, I think that's what he said. And I was like, what is that? He said, driving while black. And I made a little joke of it, but yeah, I just felt like I just felt like I wasn't free to go to where I want, or because my car was not the greatest car, and then I was happened to be black, that maybe they thought I was a drug dealer, or I was, you know, up to no good. I just didn't like it.
Thank you for your call, Frederick. Really appreciate you, and we appreciate all of you guys for calling the G and Ursula Show, and for you that continue to listen to our show. There's a lot of texts today, and there's a lot of texts of support, and there's a lot of texts who don't like this conversation.
It's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. Guess what? We're going to have it, and it's going to happen right here. And that's it, because it needs to happen. The conversation needs to continue. You don't have what just happened across our country, and then you just move on to the next thing. That's what we've been doing for too many years. And so, again, we're grateful that you listen to Cairo Radio and the G and Ursula Show. Coming up next, we have a former police officer on to give us his take on what he thinks about things happening right now and what it's going to take to move forward. It's the G and Ursula Show.
You have been listening to the G and Ursula Show. Coming up in about 15 minutes from now, we will do scenarios. But today is going to be a much more serious conversation because one of our listeners wants our advice about something that happened at work, and he needs this advice to make a decision about what he's going to do later today. But right now, let's talk about what happened over the weekend. As we've been watching the protesting and rioting across the country following the death of George Floyd, it is so hard not to feel sadness and anger and even despair. And many of you have been reaching out to us over the weekend asking what you can do. You've been sharing your heartbreak over what is happening. One of our listeners sent us an email, G, sharing his heart. His name is Craig Dockstadter. And he has a unique perspective as a former police officer and someone who is also ordained, someone who has been trained to help counsel people. And Craig joins us live now on the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you guys are doing well. I'm at least enjoying the nice Washington weather we have.
Yes, that is something that is definitely a bright spot in this darkness. And Craig, you really touched my heart when you reached out to us over the weekend, because you were speaking your heart and you were speaking as someone who has been a former police officer. Why don't you tell us what you felt over the weekend as you were watching what was happening?
Heartbreak and sadness is probably the easiest way to put it. I mean, it's really hard to place what kind of emotions everybody's experiencing, and trying to put words on something that's so tragic is really hard. I know for myself, as somebody that has held that blue line and worked alongside really good police officers, that it can be challenging at times to try to find the good in humanity. We've seen a lot of things that people don't know. There's a lot of things that we've seen that are tragic and things that we wish we could unsee. But the death of Mr. George Floyd was just totally uncalled for. There was no reason for that to happen. It left me with a lot of unanswered questions. A lot of things that I understand there's two sides to a story, but still there are so many variables there that could have been done had the things been done properly.
Hey, Craig. Craig, when it comes to racial profiling, do you believe that that is a problem in policing even today in 2020?
I think so. I've been out of law enforcement for almost 9 years now, but when I was in there, I had seen it on occasion. And I've worked in a couple different areas, worked in some small cities and some large cities, and I think that it still exists. But there's no excuse not to stand up and say something for it. So if you see something, you need to say something. You should have the courage to do that. And I'm not trying to say that these cops are bad or these cops are good. I'm just saying that if something is wrong and you're seeing an injustice, you need to have the courage to stand up and say what it is. And, you know, you're there to protect and serve the communities that you live in. And if you see something wrong, like racial injustice, you need to have the courage to say something.
And just speaking of the case of George Floyd, what do you think should happen to the other officers who didn't say anything?
There needs to be some level of accountability beyond what's already happened. I understand that they've already taken and been removed and they've been fired, and that's impacting their families. And I don't wish that on anybody. But at the same time, you had three other officers that were there that had the ability to say something and for whatever reason chose not to. And because of that, we had an unnecessary death of George Floyd. Had they said something, we'd probably be having a totally different conversation. The truth is that, you know, training needs to happen on a regular basis. A lot of people, especially when I did the job, it was very clear that you got trained, you went out and you did your field training for a few weeks, and then you were out on your own and you hoped you made the right decision. Mm-hmm. But you should still have continuing ongoing training, because policing changes just like people change. You have to be able to embrace that change and adapt and move on to what is going to be best. And just because it worked then doesn't mean it's going to work now.
Craig, as the son of a police officer and the son of a probation officer, I do not allow the conversation around me to let anybody think and say that all cops are bad. The same way that over the weekend we saw a lot of peaceful protests that happened throughout the country, but unfortunately it only took a very small percentage to make everybody look bad in that situation. Let me ask you your opinion on the rioting and the looting that was seen across the country. How do you believe the police handled and responded to that?
I think if I'm understanding the question right, and so my understanding is, because situations change and so does policing and whatnot, I'm saddened by the fact that people that were there trying to protest peacefully about the injustice were overtaken, as you said, by a small group of angry people that try to push it in a different perspective. But I think that in our state, we've done well. But when you look at how other places have handled the situation around the country, I don't know what their training is in other places. I would love to believe that it's the same no matter where you go. But being that I've worked in law enforcement in two different states, I know that that's not the case. But I would say that Washington has done better than they have in the past, because I've been here with other events, but there's still room to improve. And that's not a knock on our police officers. It's really not. It's just there's always room to improve. There's always time to have that dialogue of how can we do better next time. It's no different than when you're in a church setting. You always want to make sure that if you're missing the need of what a person has at that time, have that communication to see how you missed the mark and what you can do better, because the next person may not tell you what you need to improve on, and they may just label you as a bad minister or as a bad cop.
Craig, one of the things that you said in your message to us is that, you know, you have this background, and we love the perspective that you're bringing. You have this background. You've also have, you know, the background of being someone who is ordained, and you were reaching out to us and asking for help and how we can move forward, which honestly, I wish G and I had all the answers. We are seeking answers as well. What would you like to see? And I think the biggest question for us is, what can we do differently, all of us individually?
I think, you know, people need to remember that there's still good in the world, and it's hard to see that. It's so easy to take the easier road to find the negatives and the destruction and what's happening, and it's really hard to find the positive. And I think just continuing to spread the positive message of hope that, you know, we need to unify. We need to get together. We need to pray. I mean, our country is having a lot of issues right now, and we really need to be praying for our leadership. We need to be praying for our policemen, our firemen, the people that are peacefully protesting, the George Floyd family. They need our prayers, and we need to give them hope that although this was a tragedy, we need to unify to make sure that this doesn't happen again and give hope for the next generation. I have kids. I don't want my kids to have to go through this, mm-hmm. but I'm saddened to believe that it probably will happen again. And I don't want that. And so I'm trying to do everything I can with my kids. And I want everybody out there to do the same. Think of your actions. Think of your responses. Find the good in the person. You don't have to always agree with them, but respect them, love them, and spread hope, because that's the only way we're going to change this. And that's what I'm hoping happens here, is that we come back to reunifying as a country and as a people, that we pray about things, we reach out, we do what we need to do to make sure that we're loving on those in our community in all circumstances, not just the midst of a tragedy.
I love
Craig,
it.
Love that, man. Thank you. Thank you for reaching out to our show, and thank you for joining our show. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I listen to you guys every day. Love what you do. I love that you guys continue to bring hope, and you guys continue to bring a positive message when so much of the world wants us to believe the negative. So thank you for what you guys do.
And thank you.
Coming up next, usually we do scenarios. And, well, we won't be doing scenarios this time because we had one of our listeners reach out differently and to talk about racism. And he reached out to us about racism in his workplace. And he needs some advice on whether to contact his HR. So we have that discussion next. It's the G and Ursa Show.
You've been listening to the G and Ursula Show. Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, Bellevue Police Chief Steve Milet is going to join us, and he's going to talk about why he was kneeling with the protesters yesterday. But right now, we usually do scenarios, and we have a good time when we do this segment, G. But this one is a lot more serious, and one of our listeners wrote us over the weekend with a dilemma that he says is weighing heavily on him, given everything that has transpired in recent days. And, G, he specifically wanted your feedback, what you would do in this situation. So here it is.
Okay.
Dear G and Ursula, I was in our break room at work last week with my supervisor, and we were having a conversation about COVID-19. For some reason, a coworker who just happens to be Filipino blurted out that he thinks all black people stink. I am biracial. My father is white. My mother is black. But you would assume that I'm white if you were to look at me. My supervisor and I were both shocked, so we asked him, "What do you think they smell like?" He said he didn't know, but all he knew is that they all smell bad. My question to you guys is this. Should I report this to human resources? I did talk to the manager, but he just seems to think my coworker should apologize and that's it. That has not happened yet. What should I do? I don't want my coworker to be fired, but something needs to happen.
Oh, wow. Well, let me answer, and then I have to share a quick 30-second story with you, Ursula.
Of course.
Yes, you should tell human resources that. Obviously, it's on your heart, and obviously you feel a certain way. And if this coworker has that feeling, and whether it was, I don't know the context, I don't know if he was serious or if he was joking, that's for you to judge. But you absolutely should document something like that, because I'm quite sure that your company would want to know if one of their employees feels that way, to kind of save them from some further. Because right now we keep seeing in the news where in employees are messing up on social media, and then their employers are having to answer for their employees' mistake. Mm-hmm. So you definitely want to document that. Now you ready for my story?
Yes.
All right. So nobody judging here. When I was younger, we were getting ready to go and play an all-white baseball team. I've shared this story on the air, and afterwards we all had pizza, but I'll get to that in a second. But we were going to go play this all-white baseball team, and that was a really big deal. I was probably 10 or 11 years old, and I was talking about it, and it was so, we all of us was talking about it. And so the conversation was, I never forget this, I remember his name, I don't want to say his name. He said, "Hey, I heard all white people smell like dogs." And I said, "You did?" He said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, when, you know, because when their hair gets wet." I said, "Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Huh." So we go play the baseball game. We go to play. At the end of the game, all the coaches, they bought pizza. And then we were supposed to pair up with another player. And so I was playing, and I'm sitting down eating pizza with these couple kids, actually. And I was so fascinated with talking to them, because I was asking them questions, and I was weirded out. I was like, "Man, you guys like the same TV shows that I like, because they like Silver Spoons and I like Silver Spoons." And we were talking about all these kind of things that we had in common. And I thought, that's interesting. Well, during that time, I was actually thinking, like, well, they don't stink. They don't smell like anything. Oh, man, maybe my friend didn't know what he was talking about. So when he made that comment, and I read that, when you heard that story, I thought back to that moment of, as a kid, that was told to me, and how I thought that for a little bit of time, and how I found out, like, wait a minute. That's actually not true. Now, to be a grown adult and still think that is absolutely ridiculous to still have thoughts like that. In 2020, to have thoughts like that, my goodness.
Well, and the one thing that I told this listener was that...
What's that?
If he doesn't feel... I mean, the first thing I would do is talk to the person again and just say, "I want you to know something. This is how you made me feel when you said that." I mean, the first thing I would do, because it sounds like these are coworkers and the same. Not everybody feels comfortable doing that, but if you feel comfortable enough to do that, I mean, it sounds like, I'm surprised that the supervisor just was shocked and then didn't do anything. But I would say, hey, it's just not appropriate, right? And this is how it made me feel.
Yeah.
And I wish you wouldn't say that, you know. And then, you know, but definitely, if you feel like, you know, this is something that is being shared, that is something that's making you feel uncomfortable, and it's adding to and making it a very tough work environment, you know, that's why human resources needs to know, not necessarily to fire this person, but at the very least, maybe they need to, you know, have a better understanding. Maybe they need to be educated on why it is inappropriate.
Maybe the human resources might do something where they hire an outside agency to come in and teach a class on that. Who knows what they'll do? Right. Chef, your thoughts on things?
I think you absolutely have to speak up in the moment when those things happen. If people do not speak up and let it be known in whatever social environment they're in, whether it's with friends who's telling the racist joke or in their workplace when they hear something like that, if you don't speak up, you're complicit with it. You are passively allowing that to happen. And frankly, unless you trust your HR department, which a lot of us don't, you have more power, and I'm not saying that here, but you have more power as a person to change someone's mind by letting them know person to person this is not okay than reporting them.
I love that idea, Chef, but the problem in my case was this was my boss. That's a little harder.
Coming up next, we have Chief Milette, Bellevue Police Chief, on the show. It's the G&R Show.